You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks a lot for tuning in. We just heard from a political scientist about how states are now somewhat less likely to learn from each other and adopt good policies. If you think about it, here in Southeast Michigan, we've got a lot of issues that we might look to other states to help solve, and we almost never hear about those examples. We never see that kind of exchange of ideas or good practice that makes things better for us and maybe better for people in another state. But there's one issue that I think really stands apart from almost every other in that regard, and that's public transit. My entire life here in Detroit, we have really struggled with the idea of building a reputable and reliable and efficient public transit system, not just inside the city of Detroit, but between Detroit and its suburbs, maybe even between Detroit and some other cities like Ann Arbor or Lansing or Flint. And yet, if you look at states around us, there are cities that are really coming up with interesting ways to solve that problem, and we almost never look to them for their example. Well, we decided here on the show that we want to try to take a little different tack on that subject right now. We want to learn a little bit about how the state of Minnesota was able to expand public transit, which is something that we desperately need here in Southeast Michigan, and be successful in their efforts doing it. Chris Coleman was the mayor of St. Paul, Minnesota, between 2006 and 2018. He helped establish light rail between Minneapolis and St. Paul, which first opened in 2014. He's here now to talk to us about how the Twin Cities did it and whether there are things we could learn from them here in Southeast Michigan. Chris Coleman, welcome to Detroit Today.
Good morning. I'm happy to be on your program.
So let's just start with this. How did you do it? What was the process like for getting this light rail implemented between Minneapolis and St. Paul? And I will say up front, I've been to Minneapolis and St. Paul several times. I've used the light rail. I've seen the light rail there. And each time I've kind of marveled at how efficient it seems and how much people there seem to be embracing it. They use it. And that's one of the things that we've really struggled with. So tell us how you got this done.
Well, I would tell you it's a very complicated journey and no one thing that was the key to success. But to the point of your earlier comments, one of the things that we did was we went around to other parts of the country. We went to Metro Denver, we went to Dallas, we went to cities that had really embraced investment in public transportation. We saw the impacts of it. We saw the ways that they were moving forward with investment in public transportation and a multimodal system, so not just reliant on one or two light rail lines, but really having good bus service and bike trails and walking, you know, everything that's necessary for a complete multimodal transit system. And we said, you know what, these are our competitors economically. These are our competitors for bringing in new talent into our community. If we don't do this, we're going to fall behind these other metro areas. And so I think there was a consensus from the leadership in the community, both in the metropolitan area and at the state level, that said, we need to do this because this is important for the economic vitality of our region.
So you said that you went and looked at what other cities had done. Talk about some of the examples that you saw and the things that you were able to borrow from those examples.
Well, I think Denver was particularly instructive for us because they were moving forward in a massive way. They were really relying on multiple lines. They put together a funding source and said, you know, we're not just going to build one line. And this is actually a challenge for us in the Twin Cities region. We're kind of building one line every 20 years. So we need to figure out how to accelerate that. But it was clearly one of the challenges for us, or one of the, I guess, inspirations for us, was this really comprehensive approach that Denver was taking. And then when we went to Dallas and took a look down there and said, you know, here's a southern state, here's not one that we kind of normally associate with investments of this magnitude and public resources. And we said, boy, we can't be beat by Dallas on this. And so there's a little bit of a competitiveness to all of this. But the fact of the matter is, there's a lot to learn from other communities.
So tell us a little more about the line that goes from Minneapolis to St. Paul, how far it goes, how it connects the two cities, how much it costs to build it. I mean, one of the things that we've really faced challenges with here is the cost of public transit. We've got a new 3.5-mile line that runs from our downtown up to about the center of the city, so not a very long run. It costs about $150 million to do that. And you know, there's not federal money available the way there used to be to do things like that. Now we're having to subsidize that line with a lot of public money that wasn't anticipated at the time. It seems like that's always a challenge. I'm really curious about the economics and the practicality, I guess, of that line from Minneapolis to St. Paul.
Yeah, well, I think anytime you put a sticker on a project of this magnitude, of course, it seems out of control. You know, you go, oh, it's $1 billion. At the time, the light rail line between Minneapolis and St. Paul, as we say in St. Paul, from St. Paul to Minneapolis, the cost is always, enormous. It was the largest public works project in the history of the state of Minnesota at the time that it was built. And so there's no, no getting around, and you can't sugarcoat the fact that these are expensive projects. The challenge is we don't compare apples to apples. So we don't talk about the cost of building a freeway mile, nor do we factor in the public resources that go into maintaining that mile, whether that's fixing potholes or plowing the road in the winter. So what really, when you do your apples to apples comparisons and the amount of public support that's required to maintain those lines, it's really much more of a fairer comparison that I think shows pretty well in terms of the amount of people that you can move over any given stretch of road or light rail. The critics will always say, well, we're not getting cost recovery at the fare box. Well, you don't get cost recovery at the fare box, but you don't build those systems in order to do that. You build it because of the secondary and tertiary benefits in addition to just moving people back and forth to work. There is ample study after ample study that says, you get fixed investment in new housing, new businesses along the line. You get people moving into communities. You know, if you look at the Twin Cities, we have seen just an explosion of housing along the light rail line between the two cities. We've also seen the explosion of investment in, we have our new Major League Soccer stadium on the line. We have investments at the University of Minnesota, which was a challenge getting the line to go through there. I mean, there's just, you really see the benefits as a result of that. And particularly given what's happening in cities across the country since the pandemic and since post George Floyd's murder, you are seeing challenges for cities, but where you see the investment that was made by the public sector in transit lines, you're doing much better than you are in other places.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking with Chris Coleman. He was the mayor of St. Paul, Minnesota between 2006 and 2018. He helped establish a light rail line between Minneapolis and St. Paul, or as he would say, between St. Paul and Minneapolis. It first opened in 2014. He's talking with us about how they did that. We are talking about this because, of course, we struggle quite mightily here in Southeast Michigan with ample public transit. Think of the things that we've done over maybe about a 50-year stretch, the things that we've tried, many of which have not worked, many of which have run into real trouble with different governments being able to cooperate over transit. We fight about money all the time when it comes to public transit. They seem to have solved at least some of those problems in Minneapolis and St. Paul. The question is, why can't we learn from them? As always, we want to hear from you on the phones and on social. Give us a call. 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can include you that way. Let's go to Pat in Birmingham first. Pat, what's on your mind?
Hi, Stephen. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Just wanted to point out that this example that you're offering here from our friends in Minnesota is actually a classic example of how the laboratory system works in the United States and is still alive and well. If it weren't for these other cities' abilities to solve their problems in a unique and individual way, which is a compelling point in the Constitution, the Minnesota folks wouldn't have been able to go to these places in the first place. They would have turned immediately to the federal government. So I think that really sort of emphasizes the point that the laboratory system is alive and well and still needs its support. Also, keep in mind that the founding fathers really intended for the federal government to be one of those laboratory schools as well. Mm-hmm. And so and the abortion example is a classic one. There were laws in the states in the 70s about abortion, and finally it became a national issue. So I certainly appreciated the points your first caller was making, but just wanted to add that the laboratory system is still a pretty big necessity as it relates to things like local government if they choose to take advantage of it.
Yeah, yeah. Pat, I really appreciate the call on that and that insight. Chris Coleman, I wonder if you can talk about the coalitions that you had to get together to build this, the political hurdles, I guess, that you had to clear in order to make this happen?
Well, one thing that we have in the Twin Cities that was very unique at the time it was created, which was in the late 60s, kind of developed in the early 70s, was a metro regional governance system. It's not a true governance in the sense of, you know, dictating daily policy or zoning ordinances or any of those things. It's not like a Nashville Metro or Louisville or some of those other cities, but it is a governance system that was really put in charge from a regional perspective on transit issues, on water and sewer and some of those other things, called the Metropolitan Council. And that leadership of the Metropolitan Council really drove the momentum to get the systems built in the first place. We also had the counties that were acting as regional rail authorities for each of the Ramsey County and St. Paul, Hennepin County and Minneapolis. And the leadership of the county board members was critical. And it was a three-part funding system. So there was the local regional rail authorities were responsible for, I think, 10%. The state was responsible for another 30 or 40%. And then the federal government ultimately came in with about half of the funds for those systems. And so, you know, those opportunities are important. You have to build those alliances and you have to have support. You have to have support of a state legislature, and particularly a governor. Mm-hmm. You have to have support of your regional players. And it's also important to understand it from a business perspective. And I think having support of business leadership, we have in a group called the Itasca Group that was really instrumental. As a matter of fact, the person that is now in charge of our Met Council used to be the chair of the Itasca Group. And he was one of the folks. The interesting thing about him is he was actually the owner of a bus company. But he understood that great transit systems weren't just dependent upon one mode. It was really about having all of these other pieces. So I would say it was a citizen coalition, you know, demanding better transit. It was the government on the local level. It was the government on the state level. And then we did have a strong support at the time. Congressman named Jim Oberstar was the chair of the Federal Transportation Commission in the House. And he understood that great cities and great communities were built from great transit systems, among other things, and understood that the federal government had a role in supporting all those things. So there were a lot of partners at this table, a lot of fathers and mothers to this project.
Yeah. Let's take one more call before we have to break. Tim in Minneapolis. Tim, welcome to the show.
Hi. So thank you, Stephen, for touching on this issue. I split my time between Minneapolis and Detroit, and I love listening to WDET. Hmm. So I think would be helpful for listeners in Detroit to just visualize what it's like to have a really wonderful transit system. So, of course, it's not just our two LRT lines. It's our bus system and how things run on time and frequently. For example, near my house in South Minneapolis is the number 14 bus line on Bloomington Avenue, and you can set your watch by it. I have to plan to be there a couple minutes early because it arrives exactly on time, and a lot of times I'll be approaching the stop and I'll see the bus go by. Oops, I missed it. Well, I was 30 seconds late. And it comes every few minutes, and it's not even one of the main lines. So it really improves a person's life to have the option of getting around that way, especially, you know, if you're in a place in Detroit where owning a car is so expensive for the insurance and everything else. And also in Minneapolis, we have a multimodal system where we have a great network of bicycle routes that are off-road in old railroad corridors or along rivers or otherwise offer a relatively nonstop travel opportunity, which offers fast, safe, and pleasant bicycle transportation. Huh. So it all works together really well.
Yeah. Tim, I'm really glad you called and illuminated that example, because I mean, as you say, you live in both places, and it sounds like you use the public transit in the Twin Cities as well, which I think is one of the things that's one of the problems here, is that a lot of people feel like it's not useful enough for them, it's inconvenient, and so usage doesn't reach the heights that it should. But I really appreciate your call. Chris Coleman, it was really great to have you here with us to talk about this LRT in Minneapolis-St. Paul. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Okay, we're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we are going to talk about transit here in Southeast Michigan. Transit changes as a result of the elections on November 8th. Stay with us for more Detroit Today.